Good morning, and welcome to the GAIN Capital fourth quarter and full year 2013 earnings conference call. All participants will be in a listen-only mode. Should you need assistance, please signal a conference specialist by pressing the star key followed by zero. After today's presentation, there will be an opportunity to ask questions. To ask a question, you may press star, then one on your touch-tone phone. To withdraw your question, please press star, then two. During this conference call, management will make forward-looking statements to assist you in understanding its expectations for future performance. These statements are subject to a number of risks that could cause actual events and results to differ materially, and I refer you to the company's press release of February 27, 2014, and the company's most recent 10-Q and 10-K SEC filings for discussions of those risks. In addition, statements during this call, including statements related to market conditions and the integration of global futures of Forex and based on management's views as of today, and it's anticipated that future developments may cause these views to change. Please consider the information presented in this light. The company may at some point elect to update the forward-looking statements made today, but specifically disclaims any obligation to do so. I will now turn the call over to GAIN's CEO, Glenn Stevens, to discuss the fourth quarter and full year 2013 results. Please go ahead, sir.
Thank you, operator, and good morning to all of you who joined our call today. I welcome you to GAIN Capital's full year and fourth quarter financial results conference call. I'd like to take you through some of the highlights, go through some of the specific metrics that came out of our fourth quarter and for our full year 2013. I'll then turn it over to our CFO, Jason Emerson, to go through some more in-depth detail and then touch on some of the strategic developments and business highlights that we think would give some background and some color to GAIN's full year and fourth quarter. First, on the full year highlights, one of our primary objectives was to continue to grow the company and have consolidation and acquisition be part of that strategy. 2013 gave us a successful acquisition of GFT. It significantly increased GAIN's product offering and scale, and most importantly, the operating synergies that we modeled into that acquisition are absolutely on track, in some cases ahead of schedule. We continued to diversify our revenue with commission-based business representing north of 22% of total revenue. It's important to note that's up from 3% only 2 years ago, so the progress there has been excellent. Higher customer trading metrics as a result of more favorable market conditions drove some good results for us for the quarter and for the year. Specifically, for 2013, our EPS on a GAAP basis is $0.79 and $0.85 on an adjusted basis for EPS. Overall, flipping to the next page for some specific highlights, Q4 of 2013 and also full year of 2013. For the full year, net revenue was $266.4 million. Adjusted EBITDA was $61 million. Net income of $31.3 million and an EPS of $0.79 on an adjusted basis, excluding some one-time and non-recurring charges related to deal acquisition, was $0.85. For the fourth quarter, net revenue was $83 million, adjusted EBITDA of $13.7 million, net income of $4.3 million and an adjusted EBITDA basis or adjusted EPS basis of $0.13. Again, we're happy to present continued positive numbers for the fourth quarter and also for the full year. In terms of the full year quarterly operating results, for the full year, retail volume was $1.8 trillion, up 38%, with an average daily volume of about $6.9 billion. Institutional volume, another standout success story, $4 trillion, up over 100%. GTX volume was just under $4 trillion at $3.8 trillion, and that's up 96%. Our futures DARTs were 13,785, and client assets approaching $740 million, up 66% over the previous period in 2012. For fourth quarter, retail volume was $508 billion. Again, a clearly positive result over the same period in 2012. That's up 70%. Institutional volume up over 100%. GTX volume up over 80%. Futures DARTs up 15%, and funded accounts up 56%, factoring into the acquisition as well. So it's important there to note that some of this is driven by our ability to position the company to take advantage of improving market conditions. We made that pretty clear in some of our 2012 discussions, if people remember all the way back then, and even in early in 2013. It's important to note that in 2013, overall conditions did improve. They did not go into a relatively strong period. If you look back on the next page, showing kind of a five-year snapshot of where market volatility has been, you can see that we've improved over the doldrums of 12, but we have not got back even into the normalized levels of the last 5 years or even 3 years or 2 years. So I think that we're looking to illustrate that in a partial recovery, if you will, Gain was able to be positioned properly to take advantage of that. So as customer engagement increases, we're able to see the result on the operating leverage that the business presents, and we're able to see that in the financial metrics as well. So to break down the business into the sectors, like we normally like to just give some color, the first and largest driver of our success is retail over the counter. So in there you can see that year-over-year client engagement increased, with volume being up over 38% over 12, funded accounts over 133,000. Our partner business now represents nearly 50% of retail trading volume compared to 40% in 12. The pipeline's real active for those partners. We continue to establish a leadership position for new entrants on the partnership side that want to come into this market. One of the key drivers of the GFT acquisition for us was ramping up the product offering. I've mentioned in the past, we went from a few hundred to now we're over 12,000. So having more products like that just gives our clients more opportunities to trade in different types of markets. So oftentimes market volatility will rise as a tide, but in some cases it's pockets of volatility. So it might be metals, it might be energies, it might be emerging market currency focus, what have you. But in different cases, if you can have a fairly wide swath of products to offer, then it's great when overall market conditions improve. But by having that broader spectrum of products, even if you get a pocket or two or three of higher volatility or higher improved conditions, you can get customers that offering. And so it's been a step function for us to be able to engage at a much higher level in terms of the number of products we offer. In terms of client assets, as we said, we have retail client assets of just under $600 million as of December 31st, 2013. In terms of our commission-based business, we wanted to highlight there that the commission-based business, as part of our revenue diversification strategy, continues to gain traction. The commission-based business delivered 60.8 revenue of revenue in fiscal year 2013. That represents 22% of the total revenue. Again, you have to compare that to previous periods, and that number was small single digits. And so part of the story here is to look at our business and say the retail over-the-counter business and FX drives the top-line number with the most impact. But it's important that we continue to grow multiple drivers of top line and resulting EBITDA with enlarging the pie at the same time. So it's not a replacement story, it's a growth story, but it's also a diversification story where you have complementary revenue streams. GTX, our premier ECN platform, continues to gain loyal followers, market share. If you look at the quarterly average daily volume in that of a compounded 14% since kind of the middle of 2011, that's been a consistent story of bringing in new participants, bringing in new supporters and liquidity providers and makers and takers on that platform. And knock on wood, it's been a one-way door so far with people coming in and being really happy with the service and really happy with the technology. And so we continue to expand the base of users every quarter. We add material participants on that platform. The sales trader business is something that we added as part of the GFT acquisition, kind of fits into that niche somewhere between the largest institutions on our ECN, but above the retail traders. And so the sales trader business as part of the GFT represented an 18% growth in accounts since we closed the GFT transaction last September in 13. So we're happy to fold that business in as part of an integration story, but also grow it since we took it in. And I think the similar story shows up in futures, where we purchased a unit from Schwab a little over a year and a half ago, and we've seen that overall business continue to increase with a 23% year-over-year client asset improvement. And we do actually see some further opportunities in that market, as that's still quite a fragmented retail industry on the retail futures industry. Next page, just for some specific results, is Jason going to take over that from the fourth quarter and financial results?
Great. Thank you, Glenn. I'm now going to take you through the results for the fourth quarter and full year in a little more detail. As Glenn noted earlier, net revenue of $83 million during the quarter reflects a combination of our organic and acquisition-based strategy. Our retail OTC revenue of $61 million for the quarter was up nearly three times compared to the fourth quarter of 2012, driven by account growth, successful completion of the GFT acquisition, as well as improved trading conditions. Revenue of $23 million for the commission-based businesses for the quarter was also up nearly three times compared to the fourth quarter of 2012. This growth is a direct result of the GTX business more than doubling, the addition of the sales trader business from the GFT acquisition, and a 26% increase in revenue from our exchange-based futures business. Total revenue of $266.4 million for 2013 is up 76% compared to 2012, reflecting our successful organic and acquisition-related initiatives to grow both our core retail OTC business as well as expand our commission-based offerings. The fourth quarter was somewhat noisy with a variety of deal-related expenses and other non-recurring items. For the quarter, adjusted EBITDA was $13.7 million with a margin of 16%. The adjusted EBITDA figure excludes restructuring and acquisition-related expenses of $3.4 million and non-recurring items, including a $2 million gain on extinguishment of the note payable entered into in connection with the acquisition of GFT at a discount, as well as a $450,000 write-down of our original $500,000 investment in Capital. For 2013, we delivered $61 million of adjusted EBITDA with margin of 23%, driven by revenue that grew 76%, while total expenses were up only 48%, reflecting our ability to deliver operating leverage. Net income was $4.3 million, or 10 cents per diluted share for the quarter, and $31.3 million, or 79 cents per diluted share for all of 2013. Adjusting net income for restructuring and acquisition-related as well as non-recurring items, we get a figure of $5.5 million and 13 cents per diluted share for the quarter, and $33.8 million or 85 cents per diluted share for all of 2013. In addition to the adjustments noted earlier, adjusted net income excludes $1.2 million in amortization expense for accelerating the retirement of a trading platform following the acquisition of GFT, which we expect to be complete early in second quarter. As you would expect, this combination of organic growth and the GFT acquisition has changed the complexion of our expense base. During the fourth quarter, we saw an overall increase in total expenses due primarily to having our first full quarter of GFT operations under our belt. We have a dedicated effort throughout the firm to achieve our goal of $35 to $45 million in expense synergies against the pre-acquisition cost base of GAIN and GFT by the end of 2014. The increase in trading expense during the quarter reflects the change in our retail OTC business mix following the GFT acquisition. As Glenn noted earlier, we now derive a higher proportion of our revenue from the indirect channel, which increases our referral fees. In addition, the strong growth of our institutional business resulted in higher sales commissions, which are presented within the trading expense line item. For the year, trading expense is up due to a combination of higher institutional volumes, the addition of GFT in the fourth quarter, as well as having a full year of the exchange-based futures business compared with only 4 months for the same period in 2012. Compensation and benefits expense of $22.1 million is up from the same time last year due primarily to the addition of GFT personnel during the quarter. Excluding the impact of GFT personnel, compensation expense for the quarter is up less than 10% compared to the same period in 2012 and up only 4% from last quarter. Our headcount reductions took place at the end of October, with certain personnel placed on transition plans that end in early 2014. As a result, we will see the benefit of personnel reductions realized by the end of first quarter of this year. Due to these actions, we took a restructuring charge of $1.2 million during the quarter. Year-over-year, compensation expense of $67.1 million is up 41% compared to 2012, with margin of 25%, which is down from 30% for the same time last year. Excluding the impact of the GFT acquisition, compensation expense is up only 15%, largely due to higher variable compensation arising from our significant increase in revenue and profitability, as well as having a full year of operations from our exchange-based futures business. Marketing expense for the quarter is up 12% versus the third quarter, as we invested in regional growth efforts, as well as taking on the GFT brand for a transition period before we fully combine it with the Forex.com brand later this year. Overall marketing expense came in 17% lower versus 2012 through a combination of efforts to increase efficiency as well as targeting higher return regions. All other expenses of $19.1 million were up during the quarter, reflecting primarily the addition of GFT. Excluding the impact of GFT, non-recurring items, and purchase price amortization, expenses are up only 11% from last quarter and up $6.8 million for all of 2013, relative to the same time last year, reflecting a combination of investment in technology supporting our institutional business, an increase in banking fees related to our increased OTC volumes, and a full year of expenses related to our exchange-based futures business. We maintain our focus on managing expenses aligned to our strategic initiatives, as well as delivering on the $35 to $45 million in expense synergies related to the GFT acquisition by the end of 2014. Lastly, on the bottom right, year-to-date retail trading revenue per million increased slightly to 110 per million, consistent with levels we've seen over the last 12 to 15 months. Turning to slide 10, GAIN will distribute its quarterly dividend of 5 cents per share on March 20th for holders of record as of March 17th. We also continue to buy back shares. During the quarter, we bought back 612,000 shares concurrent with the issuance of the convertible, as well as another 100,000 shares throughout the quarter. I'll now hand the call back to Glenn for some final comments.
Thanks, Jason. So we touted some of the financial metrics that came out of our business operations, as well as some improved conditions. We touted the opportunity we have in front of us with completing the integration of our GFT acquisition. I wanted to touch a little bit on our M&A strategy going forward, because it's important to note that although the GFT acquisition was the largest one that GAIN has made to date, it does contribute to a long string of successes that we have in terms of being an active acquirer and consolidator in this space. And it's important to note that that's part of our growth strategy going forward. So we have maintained significant capital levels to fund additional opportunities that arise. We've tapped the capital markets for a successful convertible bond offering the last quarter. We have some dry powder and other sources as well. So it, more importantly even than the resources available is the bandwidth and the operational expertise available. And we have an internal team that is battle-tested, frankly, in getting these integrations done successfully. And so the early indication on GFT is that our preparation and our focus on getting the deal done successfully has borne fruit. Now, as Jason mentioned, you take on a whole bunch of expenses, you take on a whole bunch of people, you take on a whole bunch of products, you have challenges, and again, we're coming out and saying that things have gone as expected, and in some cases better than expected, and so it puts us in a position to continue with M&A as part of our growth strategy, as a complement to our organic growth. And that M&A now spreads across several types of businesses, whether it's a complement to our institutional business, a complement to our futures business, or a complement to our retail OTC business. So now when we evaluate opportunities, it's a broader opportunity set that we're able to either have deals brought to us or go out and seek them ourselves. So we're excited about staying active in that respect. So overall, we do expect to announce additional transactions over the coming months. So we'll keep you posted on those developments. In terms of our focus for 2014, we've spent most of the call talking about a lot of highlights and progress in 2013. In terms of 2014, we want to continue to track and nail down the 35 to 45 million of the expense base reductions for combining the two companies. We want to continue to grow our commission-based business. We feel like that's a very natural progression to our retail over-the-counter business. We want to continue to expand the market share of our GTX offering. I think we absolutely have some magic in a bottle on that platform, and we expect to be a major player in that space. We're expecting some additional progress on our SEF registration that we've previously mentioned, and, you know, essentially trying to come at that market with some unique technology, proprietary technology, and be able to build that business. Again, looking at this space for, where we have commissions driving upside, that is a for the futures business, a margin-challenged business, so it's something that we have to continue to add scale. You've heard us use the word consolidation, acquisition. That leads to scale, you know, whether it's retail FX, whether it's institutional ECN-type business, or whether it's commission-based futures. Scale fits well with all of these, so that is absolutely part of our underlying mantra to make sure we build towards that, not scale for the sake of size, but scale for the sake of operating leverage potential in an improved market condition, and also the opportunity to wring some more costs out when you fold in other businesses and other people. So we'll continue with the strategic M&A. We'll continue to roll out the GFT platform across all our offerings. And I guess in kind of some of the closing remarks, I want to mention that, you know, 2013 was not a snapback opportunity in terms of market conditions. They improved, but they haven't improved to the level that I would even argue is kind of a baseline. And I think that our 13 results show our ability to generate material EBITDA and profit levels, even when the trading conditions haven't improved to the point of saying that they're really good. I also think that as we look at our commission business and we look at our GTX business, we're illustrating our ability to diversify our revenue streams. And lastly, being a successful acquirer is a skill developed over time. We're not new to that game, and we're excited about continuing to show our prowess in that respect. So overall, we're happy with a fourth quarter of 13. We're happy with the full year results. We're keenly focused on building on that positive momentum for the quarters going forward. And I'll leave it at that. We'll turn it over to Q&A, and we thank you for joining the call today.
We will now begin the question and answer session. To ask a question, you may press star, then one on your touch-tone phone. If you are using a speakerphone, please pick up your handset prior to pressing the keys. To withdraw your question, please press star, then two. At this time, we will pause momentarily to assemble our roster. We have a question from Daniel Fannon from Jefferies. Please go ahead.
Good morning, guys.
Morning, Dan.
Morning.
I guess first on the GFT deal, it seems like you guys are pretty confident of where you are in the integration process. I just want to get a sense of it, and I apologize if I missed it, but of the 35 to 45, where are you now in terms of exiting 2013? And then also thinking about from a modeling perspective, where we should see the remainder of the expense synergies coming out of which line items?
So we haven't provided guidance in terms of kind of a monthly or quarterly scorecard as to how we're progressing. Let me break it down this way. We offered up the fact that we said within kind of 1 year, you know, four quarters of the acquisition, which was essentially at the beginning of Q4, end of, you know, the last few days of September, so essentially the end of the Q3, beginning Q4 for 2013, we offered up the opportunity to say that we expect to create run rate synergies of between $35 and $45 million. We've stayed consistent with that messaging because as we model out each attribution of cost savings or synergy, then we would provide updates if we were deviating from that. So the first clear message you should have is to say over the year, that's on track. The other thing I'd mention is that it's not linear. So in some cases, it's not going to be those 12 months divided, you know, $40 million middle divided by 12 months, and it's X per million. It does have some ebb and flow. However, not being cute, it's trending towards earlier loaded than backloaded. So that we don't expect the synergies to all roll in and have the run rate get to that 40 million lower by, you know, day 364. So I think ultimately a couple of situations. For example, on the marketing side, when GFT came out of 2012, they were spending, you know, $15 million or so on marketing. We took that number down, not to zero, because there are some remnant properties that we want to be able to leverage, but that number comes down by 70% or so. And so that happens, you know, over 3 to 6 months. Then you have on the comp and ben side, we had a reduction in force of about 90 odd heads. That but it was phased out. Two-thirds of them were released in last quarter, fourth quarter of 13, and then the remaining people stayed on for varying periods of transition. Might be 3 months, might be 6 months. So in some cases, we've already identified the synergy and booked it. So, for example, we've already combined the office staff in London, in Tokyo, in Singapore, in Sydney, and so you have some lease payments that you terminate early. You have some opportunities that things have to roll off from a service provider or a technology provider contract. But when we've made that decision and those people, for example, have been communicated to, or those bodies have already been moved into the same office, that's why we're very confident in sitting here and say, okay, the schedule is on track or actually ahead of track. So, but in terms of the actual numbers, when they hit, I'd say that, if your modeling goes, it's not linear. It's trending towards the earlier part of the whole year. But most importantly is to say to look out in future years, achieving that 40 million middle, I'll say 40 middle instead of 35, same thing. But ultimately, we fully expect to achieve that run rate increase or improvement by the end of this year.
And then I guess it would be helpful then, how should we think about the core gain expense growth rate just on a normal basis as you kind of invest and look at the business?
So fair question. The mix change requires some investments in people, nothing materially crazy on OPEX or CAPEX, but I'd say that if you look at the some of the revenue mix with sales traders coming in, some of the commissions on that level might be higher than we've seen in the past on some of the retail business scaling. But we factored it in because it's variable in nature, and so that's a good thing. It's not a fixed cost increase. But I'd say that's probably the only change in terms of gains makeup. I don't know if you want to add anything, Jason.
I guess the other item is given the business mix, trading expenses. Right now, referral fees are within the trading expense, so you will see that, as you saw in Q4, continue at those similar levels.
Okay, and then just lastly, on the M&A front, I guess, can you talk about the competitive nature, for potential deals, and maybe some context around the size and of potential transactions that you're looking at now that your, GFT was bigger than you've done before? Does that allow you to go up larger as you go through this integration, or is this something where right now you're looking more at smaller kind of tuck-in type deals? Thanks.
I think the answer is both, Dan. We have a very active pipeline, a very active communication network. We have been investing in our ability to evaluate these companies, and frankly, even on our own side, investing in us being on the right side of compliance and legal and infrastructure and kind of across the board. That does put you in a positive light. So when you're entertaining a conversation with a potential acquisition target or a partner or a JV, coming in as we had, kind of taking the high road and being pretty steady for some time now, I'd say that it does open us up for those partners that are concerned about reputational risk, for those partners that see us as a diversified platform. It puts us in a good position to initiate and continue that conversation. I think also we are establishing ourselves as a good player in this market. And so, as I mentioned a little bit earlier, not all the deals have to be seeked out or sought out by us. They are actually brought to us as well. So it's a combination. So in that light, no, I wouldn't say that GFT. If anything, GFT has emboldened us to be more comfortable with larger deals. Our history in the past was for smaller deals, and it's actually proven out our model to be able to equip and integrate and plan for and execute on bigger deals. But I'd say in this case, if you look at a snapshot today of our pipeline, we have a full kind of a corp dev meeting weekly that has an active database that we go through and kind of a bit of a science that we try to evaluate opportunities and move them up or down the curve that makes them more interesting or less interesting, you know, kind of an attractiveness basis. But ultimately, I see those now, including deals that are of the size or even larger than GFT, and deals that are smaller than that, obviously, and also deals that tuck in, which we do try to look for a strategic fit first and price second. What I mean by that is we're not out as a vulture to try to pick something off. We're out first to say, how do we round out our product offering? How do we do better in a geography? How do we do better with a customer segment that maybe we're not doing the best we can with now? And so sales trade is a great example. We didn't have that middle sector. We had the ECN growing, the retail established, and that presented itself. So I think what we do there is, whether it's in futures or whether it's in content or whether it's in mobile capability or whether it's just another sizable player in our traditional retail space, those all make the grade. So sorry to give you an all-encompassing answer, but ultimately, I think actually we've honed our skills to evaluate these deals, and so they're all on the table now.
Great. Thank you.
Good, Dan.
Our next question is from Rich Repetta from Sandler O'Neill. Please go ahead, sir.
Yeah. Good morning, Glenn. Good morning. I guess the first question is on GFT. Can you go through what the revenue and EBITDA contribution in that quarter was in 4Q?
Yeah, I mean, we have that broken out, I believe, for the quarter.
For GFT?
Yeah, for GFT.
GFT's revenue was approximately $24 million for the quarter and had a negative EBITDA for the quarter of approximately $3
million. Okay. And then
to complement that answer, if we look at GFT year over year, GFT's revenue for 2012 was approximately $99 million. The revenue for 2013 came in higher than that level, driven by a combination of the core retail business as well as the sales trader business growth.
Okay.
And the loss that we disclosed to the AKAs of $31 million, they came in with clearly a much lower loss in 2013.
Got it. Thank you, Jason. And then I guess you talked a lot about the trading expenses and commissions, and how would you model that? You know, it doesn't look like it now. It's purely tied to retail, or would you look like it was 43% of retail revenue, 32% of your non-interest revenue? How would you sort of guide people, as the model sort of transforms a bit here?
Yeah, as it's currently disclosed, trading expense does include a lot of items. We've guided ranges in terms of margins between 27 and 31%, depending on business levels. So that's how I would model it at this point. We are evaluating how we enhance disclosure around referral fees and so on. So there's more to come on that front.
Yeah, so I guess just to add to that, Rich, there is a little bit more granularity coming out in the next quarter, just because, to your point, trading fees kind of lumps a lot in there, and so we're going to try to break that out so it's a little bit easier. But the stats that just Jason gave you, look back onto what Q4 and 13 look like.
And you're saying 27 to 31% of non-interest revenue or total revenue, net revenue, or what?
Of net revenue.
Okay. All right. And then, I guess, Glenn, so, strong rate per million in the quarter. And, I'm just trying to understand, it wasn't great volatility. And then you've seen some volatility, and not only a little color on how you got, I think we're calculating 121 for the fourth quarter, and then sort of the trends in the first quarter, given all the emerging market currency volatility, in late January, early February.
So I guess the comments on that, as I've heard me say in the past, is that we always consider the output of revenue per million as one factor of our overall ideas of what trading conditions are or market conditions. And volatility is one thing, but for example, if you look at the, you mentioned emerging market currency, so for example, that's a product that is fairly narrow in terms of customers that want to be able to trade that, even the products you're able to offer. So if dollar Turkey is moving, dollar RMB is moving, the Argentine peso is moving, access in general to customers is not as broad-based as when the euro moves or when dollar yen breaks out of a range. In addition, you know, the benefit of having a wider product offering also means that we get a mix shift, whether it's into, you know, equity indices or the whole CFD business that we've been touting as part of the GFT acquisition and broadening our product. So I guess what I'll go back and say is this, it cuts both ways, but you look at fourth quarter and say, gee, it didn't seem like that was that volatile and your RPM was pretty good. True, but you have a lot of products that are factoring into that now. You have a lot of customer segments, a lot of products that factor into it. Same thing for Q1. You say, damn, you know, gold moved or dollar turkey moved or nat gas moved, but can you take that and want to be able to interpret that? So all I'm trying to say is that every one of these periods, whether it's a quarter or even a year, there are a lot of drivers that provide market conditions improvement. And the point I was trying to make is that in 13, the market conditions improved, but not dramatically. And I think it was important for us to demonstrate that we didn't need a dramatic improvement over 2012 to be able to produce some decent results. And I'm sticking to that story to say that, generally speaking, in an improved environment, we will do better. But on any given short period, we don't want to just say, hey, RPM is going to come from this because the CVIX moved. Again, these are all kind of a combination of factors.
Let me try one more cut at this, I guess. The CVIX is, you know, now we're down to below 7.5. So we are approaching, like you show in your chart, you know, 3Q and 4Q, 2012 levels. So, and I guess my question, would you characterize the overall trading environment as, you know, fair, improved, or deteriorated, I guess?
So I guess a couple of things there. I mean, I think that if you look, you said improved or worse, you know, relative to what? Relative to Q4 of 2012, that was real doldrums across the board, right? I mean, in many markets, in, you know, equity, fixed income, FX, what have you, there wasn't really a lot of excitement to sell to customers of at any level, whether institutional futures or retail forex. So I wouldn't say that we're there. I would say that, yeah, on one measure, the CVIX has not carried through some of the positive momentum we saw in December and January has not carried through where it's a real frothy market. But again, our retail FX revenue now is coming more like 80% of it is coming from where that number used to be, 95% or so. And so we're trying to look broader. So I appreciate the reference to the CVIX, but as I said, we're actually trying to look across the board now and say, hey, how are we doing on the institutional side? How are we doing on the industry business? How are we doing in metals and softs and things like that? So as we continue to broaden our business base, you know, for example, we're in the 25% range coming from the U.S. where it's tightly focused on retail forex. Well, that leaves 75% outside the U.S., which is trading a much wider spectrum of products. So overall answer is, you're right, not just the CVIX. General frothiness is not there in this Q1 where we go, wow, what a fun, exciting market. We haven't seen interest rates break out. I think everybody thought that we're finally done and Janet and crew are going to come in and really make things, you know, roiled. That hasn't happened. Equity markets have continued to, you know, kind of trade back and forth last couple of weeks or months. So no, we're not in an environment that's I consider strong or trading conditions. But we're not there. We're not there either.
Okay.
Back in 2012 is what I'm saying. So I guess my answer to your question is, yeah, it hasn't. We would have loved to carry through some momentum and see a much more interesting trading market, which we're not getting. But I guess what I'm trying to say is that, and I know CVIX is a proxy often used for the engagement levels in currencies. But number one, we have to think beyond currencies now as a provider. And number two, even with the CVIX, be wary of saying that, you know, like I said, dollar turkey was moving around a lot. Because the opposite will happen. You can have the emerging markets be quiet, and you can have some decent moves in euro or yen, and that can drive client engagement because that's who they know. They're paying attention to Google and Apple moving around, not some small companies that are off the radar.
Got it. Thank you very much.
Sure, Rich.
Ladies and gentlemen, again, as a reminder, if you would like to ask a question, please press star then one on your touch-tone phone. Our next question is from John Dunn from Sidoti & Company. Please go ahead, sir.
Morning, guys.
Morning, John.
Morning.
Hi. You talked about opportunities for consolidation in futures. Can you sort of talk about what the landscape of that industry looks like and some of what, you know, size of players and how fragmented it is?
It's interesting, John, because that market really shows the full range of large established market players. Point to like an R.J. O'Brien, who has established themselves as a big provider to partners, introducing brokers and referrers and things like that. And then there's lots of mom-and-pop shops that have 5-10 people in it with, you know, $10 million of revenue that are just eke out a living every year. And so I think we see both sides of that. My feeling is that adding value was very difficult when there were two extremely dominant players in the market. So I hearken back to, unfortunately, what are two dirty words now, REFCO and MF Global. But the reality is that when they had their futures business and they were dominating that whole landscape, I would argue it wouldn't be a strategically decent opportunity for GAIN to dabble in there because it felt like those two companies had such a strong command over what that industry looked like. Well, for making lemonade out of lemons, they're both gone. And so the landscape, in my mind, hasn't reorganized yet. And so I feel like for us to fold in some of these products, look at the U.S., which other than retail Forex, doesn't have that other set of products like CFDs that you're able to offer every place else but the U.S. And so if we're going to continue to be a global provider of these, you know, non-U.S. equity-based products, then we have to have a complement to retail FX in the U.S. And so futures make sense. Now, it's a tough market because the margins aren't there with all the exchange-based stuff and the CME having a stranglehold on how tickets are processed and all that. So it does cry out for some scale. It does cry out for some integration and cutting costs out of it. And so that's the reason why it's on our radar. We made a foray into that space when we bought OEC from Schwab about a year and a half ago. And that was only supposed to be a first step. It wasn't supposed to be the end step. And so for us, even though that business has grown modestly in terms of metrics, number of customers and assets, it needs some complements, and so that's why other futures firms are on our radar. I will say that it's not likely for us to make a big bang move in the futures space in terms of a really large player. So I guess if you look at the learning curve quickly, and you look at how we moved up the food chain on the FX piece and made some small acquisitions, tucked them in, bought assets, or did small deals, and then got comfortable and were able to do a larger deal like GFT. Probably not a terrible parallel to draw on the future side to say, hey, let's do some deals so we can establish our comfort and our knowledge base. And then maybe down the road, if there is a big bang opportunity or a larger opportunity, we'd consider it. But I think it's fair to say that if you dissected our corp dev pipeline right now, they're smaller ones.
Gotcha.
And they're retail focused in nature because we think it complements our what we already have as an offering.
Gotcha. And then can you just talk a little bit how GTX might be taking share for some of the big guys given the headlines going on there?
So not to prey on what makes for good news copy, and there's a lot of chat about things going on the bank side in terms of this space. You know, for us, we wanted to bring to the market a alternative technology offering that frankly added value. And the entrenched players, like an EBS or like some of the single bank platform, I think had a bit of a steady state going on where they had a solid product, They had a very strong incumbency using them. We need to be somewhat disruptive. I think we're establishing that fact. We didn't come in with an also-ran. I would argue that we were a little bit late to the game back in 2011 when we said, let's bring this entrant to market. But being late's okay as long as it's better. And I think we're showing that now. So, yeah, I would probably characterize what's going on the bank side as a potential tailwind for us, frankly, because if we're able to establish the fact that as an alternative platform that's unbelievably transparent and flexible and fair, then I think, yeah, it only is a benefit or a positive for us. So I'm not looking to prey on a negative situation, but if you had to characterize it, I'd say that it does put us in a good light as an alternative to some of those single bank platforms or some of the entrenched incumbencies that may have to hit some headwinds.
Great. Thank you very much.
Sure, John.
Our next question is from Patrick O'Shaughnessy from Raymond James. Please go ahead.
Hey, good morning, guys.
How are you there, Patrick?
Good morning.
I'm doing well. So my first question is, I'm just looking at the minimum regulatory capital requirements that you guys talk about on slide 17, I think it is, and it looks like it dropped about $10 million versus the third quarter. Is that some of the capital synergies that you were talking about with the GFT deal that you've been able to extract out over the last few months?
Yes, Patrick, it's a partial achievement of those capital synergies. Again, that's not related to the 35 and 45. We will see additional synergies as we continue the merger of our UK-based entities as well as our U.S. entities here from a regulatory standpoint.
Okay. And do you have a sense for how much more you'll be able to free up in terms of regulatory capital?
We're always looking to optimize, Patrick. We're looking at a range of 5 to 10 million in additional capital synergies.
Okay, and then as you're looking at and thinking about M&A, how are you thinking about the capital that you have available to do that? So I guess you have your cash in your balance sheet, you have your credit facility, which I believe you still have $50 million available under that. How are you thinking about, you use cash versus shares, maybe raise more debt for a deal? How are you basically thinking about how you would use capital for further M&A?
So I think that I mentioned a bit about having some dry powder, which you alluded to. We continue to work on our keeping our credit facilities updated. In terms of that $50 million that you mentioned, that went away when we did the GFT deal. We're in the process of replenishing that as we speak. We did, as I mentioned, have a successful convertible offering, which, like anything else, kind of establishes you as a participant in that market. And so I think our track record is a good start there. I think ultimately, Patrick, we have the ability to tap capital markets. I think the way to do it is in conjunction with a tangible deal that makes sense to use it. I think that if we're able to go back to the market, whether it's primary or, once all these sources of capital are available to us now, I would argue, because, number one, we've established ourselves. Number two, we have a sound business in place. By being able to illustrate the integration successfully the way we did, I think when you go back to the market in the future and say, hey, we have this other idea, when you have a track record, it makes it a lot easier. When you're the first time, it's harder. When it's not, the times after that, we've already greased the skids there. So I guess I would say yes. For the smaller type deals, we have sufficient resources at hand today. For the larger deals that are also on our radar now, we will likely be using capital markets for that and our own stock. As the currency of our stock continues to improve, then that's also at our beck and call.
Gotcha. Thank you for that.
Yep.
And the second question for me is for Sales Trader. So if we assume GTX kind of had the same revenue capture, kind of a 7 to 8 per million that it's had last few quarters, I think that implies something like an 80 per million rev capture for Sales Trader. One, is that kind of broadly correct? And two, is that kind of a good run rate to think about going forward?
So not sure how you derived the calc on that when you mentioned it, but that number one, that business ranges because of the services provided by the sales trader. You know, it's a higher touch business. It's pretty wide array of products offered. So kind of depending on if it's a single stock future, or if it's an industry, or if it's currencies, or if it's an API, going through, us. So it really kind of varies. I'd say that you're probably more like in the 50 range, 45, 50 range, if you had to put it in aggregate and say, here's what it applies there. So, from a modeling purposes, that's probably more likely. But I guess it's important to know that the product mix and the different types of customers that are served in that segment is pretty wide. It's one of those ones where mathematically, yeah, I think if you use $50, you're probably okay. But just keep in mind that it is pretty wide. Patrick, it's kind of like when people say on a retail business, hey, your average deposit is 7,000. I don't know if we have anybody who has 7,000. We have like tons of people at 2 and tons of people at 20. So the average is 7, but I don't know how many people are actually there. So in this case, we do have a bit of a spray in terms of the sales trader, because it comes down to the value add, the products that the customer trades. But in aggregate, I think that would be reasonable guidance.
Okay, appreciate that. And then lastly from me, as you look at the regulatory landscape right now, is there anything out there that kind of causes you to lose any sleep? And it seems like the FCA is maybe stepping up some of their oversight. Certainly they just levied a fine against one of your competitors. Anything out there that's really concerning to you right now?
No. I think it's one of those situations where you make decisions based on your infrastructure, based on your approach to the markets. It's kind of a level of scale that you can be very aggressive or very conservative, and I don't think we're on either end of the scale, and I like to think that we've optimized our commercial attitude, but stay on the right side of those fines. And so no, I don't other things keep me up, but mostly they're under 10 years old, so they're people under 10 years old. They have nothing to do with regulatory issues, and so I'm not concerned about that stuff. I think we keep a close eye on it, and frankly, we've invested a lot in the infrastructure and the technology, and I think that we've taken an approach that's more cooperative with the regulators versus combative. And so that doesn't always mean that there aren't things that come up, but I can say when you ask me, hey, what's your perception? My perception is we do try to work very closely with the regulators, have an open line of communication, and that's globally, whether it's the FCA or CFTC or in Japan, what have you. I think that there is a causality here between staying out of the press on those negatives and the efforts that you put in. I mean, I like to think that the work we put in is driving our ability to make sure we stay on the right side of those situations.
Gotcha. Appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you.
Our next question is from Brian Gonick from SunVest. Please go ahead.
Hi. Good morning, guys.
Good morning, Brian.
Will you provide revenues and EBITDA for GFT in the quarters this year?
No, I think that teasing them apart, Brian, is not a helpful process, because we are working towards being able to pull the costs out by combining the operations. And as I mentioned, there are certain things that GFT brings to the table in terms of product mix and customer segment and partners and geography, but they are designed to fit in an intertwined basis with what we do. So by this time next year, it should become completely blurred that you don't know who's coming from what.
Right. So if it's $10 million a quarter in cost savings, and based on your comments, maybe you're a third of the way there, that would imply roughly $6.5 million-ish of further cost saves, let's say. And if I look at GFT, you said EBITDA was negative $3 million. Would normalized, quote-unquote, EBITDA be closer to $3.5 million positive? Is that the way to look at it?
A couple of things. Let me take a stab at this. Go ahead, Jason. Oh, no, I was just going to say that first of all, in terms of the linear aspect of saying, hey, when you capture the cost, like I mentioned earlier on the call that It's not a spigot that has $10 million per quarter. What we've said is that by the end of this year, our run rate will be, based on where pre-acquisition was, our run rate will be $40 million, 35 to 45, lower, phased in, right? In terms of putting that against GFT EBITDA, on the one hand, as I mentioned, what we wanted to illustrate there is that we bought a business that was in a challenged state in 2012. We took it over in the fourth quarter. Our goal here is to integrate the two businesses, keep the revenue part of it intact, and I know this is the holy grail, but keep the revenue part of it intact and reduce the cost to the point where they're an accretive business. And we're getting there. We're getting there because if you just look at fourth quarter alone, where we had something to say about it, the numbers started to normalize. And I'm not saying that a $3 million drag is something we wanted to hang around, but I am saying that if you compare it to the, three times that of the previous quarter, previous year, it's obviously an improvement. So as an overall operation, I don't know if you can net a quarterly synergy with a quarterly EBITDA, but I will say that net, by this year, they will be a positive contributor on the revenue side and on the EBITDA side. And part of that reason will be because we're taking out synergy, but taking out synergy means cost reduction from Gain, cost reduction from GFT. It's kind of a net number. We're not looking at GFT to say, hey, turn that into a profitable business, because that business should be indiscernible as a standalone, within 6 months.
Okay. Your tax rate in the quarter was like 38% relative to a 30% rate for the year. What's the right sort of normalized tax rate do you think this year?
For in 2013, we had some one-time items that bumped up our effective tax rate for the full year to 30.5%. For 2014, I would use 28 to 29%. We're looking to optimize our transfer pricing and tax, through our various jurisdictions, whereas, as Glenn mentioned, north of 70% of our business is done outside of the U.S. So the right range for this year at this point is 28 to 29%, and as we make progress on those efforts, we'll get you more color on that.
Although, Brian, it is a focus for us to improve that, so I think that Jason is tossing out the safe bet, but it absolutely is one of our internal focuses to say, how do we get that, 10 to 20% better than that? But from a modeling perspective, you don't want to get out ahead of our skis. But that it's not something that we're resting on our laurels to say 28, 29 is fine. I don't believe that.
Okay. And last two questions. What was the average price you paid for the stock you bought back in the quarter? And what will the fully diluted share count be for Q1?
I think that the average price we will disclose. I don't have it in front of me here, but we will disclose that as part of regular filings. And so we were actively participating throughout the quarter, so I can tell you that. So if you look at the range of the quarter, you're going to get a reasonable idea of where we participated. The actual figures we'll be posting, so you'll have all that. What was the second part of the question, Brian?
What's the fully diluted share count going to be for Q1?
That's a good question. By the way, it'll be in the 10K, the other stuff, but
yeah,
the fully diluted part.
Yeah, so we're at 42.6 right now. It will go up slightly. We can get back to you on that.
Okay.
I don't have
okay, so 43, let's say, for round numbers.
You could round it up
yes,
to 43.
Yes.
That's it.
Okay, great. All right, thank you.
You got it, Brian.
Thanks, Brian.
Have a good day.
At this time, this will conclude our question and answer session. I would like to turn the conference back over to management for any closing remarks.
Thanks, operator. So again, thanks everybody for joining today. Hopefully, we're able to give you some color on our progress for Q4 and through 2013, and even more importantly, give some perspective on our opportunities presenting us in 14 and our excitement about going after those. So thanks for joining, and have a good day.
The conference has now concluded. Thank you for attending today's presentation. You may now disconnect your lines.